You're listening to Peel Talks Housing, the Region of Peel's podcast delving deep into complex issues around affordable housing and homelessness and efforts to help residents get and keep housing. Episodes will feature residents with lived experience, Region of Peel staff, our partners, academics, policymakers, and other leading voices in the affordable housing sector. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of the Region of Peel or the direction provided by the Region of Peel's Council. Hey everybody, welcome to Peel Talks Housing. My name is Axel Villamil and I'm your host today. Today's topic of discussion is homelessness in Peel. We are joined today by two amazing guests, Melody Watson and Dr. Abe Oudsoorn. Welcome everybody. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having us.
Good to be here.
Amazing. Glad to have you here. Amazing. Melody, can you tell us more about what you do and any companies that you represent?
As you mentioned, I'm Melody Watson. I am the executive director with the Peel, with the Salvation Army Peel Shelters and Housing Services. I've been with the Salvation Army, believe it or not. Tomorrow is my 31-year anniversary working in social services with the Salvation Army. And I'm very happy to be doing this and happy to be here today.
And Dr. Abe.
Yeah, so I've got a background as a nurse. And so I worked as a nurse with people experiencing homelessness. And since then, have moved into academia. I'm associate professor in the School of Nursing at Western and the Arthur Labatt Family Chair in Nursing Leadership in Health Equity. And I also manage the International Journal on Homelessness.
Wow. Sounds like a group of amazing guests. And not only that, you have a wide range of skills on the ground, academic, intellect. We got it all here. So you know, the discussion today is homelessness. It's a huge, huge, huge topic. And we're actually going to start off with, you know, a pretty broad question, which is basically, what is homelessness? You know, what does it mean to be homeless? And if I can dive a little deeper there, is that the same for everyone who enters homelessness? What is everybody's opinions?
Well, from my point of view, defining homelessness is simple and it's complex at the same time. In its simplest definition, homelessness is the situation where an individual or family finds themselves without stable, safe, appropriate housing or the immediate means to obtain it. On the other hand, the term homelessness draws our attention to a range of social and economic factors linked to poverty and unstable housing, including lack of affordable housing, tenant insecurity, inadequate income, individual crisis, health problems, mental health challenges, addictions, trauma, domestic violence, and involvement with the justice system. This is a clear indicator of how broad the spectrum is when all factors are considered.
Yeah, I think that captures a lot of the breadth. And, you know, when we think about homelessness, people are often drawn to that issue of street homelessness. And so they picture folks who are absolutely sleeping rough, you know, in tents on the sidewalk. And that's one important situation and that needs our full attention. But there's many other situations as well. And in Canada, we actually developed a definition that's been taken up globally, which is kind of four typologies. And that's absolutely rough. That's those who are in emergency accommodations. So that would be like Salvation Army shelter, for example. Those who are in kind of temporary or, you know, unofficial accommodations. So that might be people who are crashing somewhere, you know, staying for a night with a friend or something like that. And those who are at immediate risk of homelessness. So those who maybe have an eviction notice. And so, you know, a lot of that is a lot more hidden. Some of it's, you know, obvious and visible, and then some of it's in our communities around all around us, and we don't necessarily see it every day like we would those who are on the streets. And so there's different kind of types in terms of where people are. And then, you know, Melody, I think, captured well that there's differential experiences too. And so, you know, anything from newcomers who've had a crisis after arriving and maybe are still establishing their citizenship, to women with children, to students at schools, you know, people leaving a violent relationship, you know, each experience is different in a way. And, you know, as I've learned in my time, that there's as many stories, as many causes as there are people who have the experience, because each story is a little bit different.
Absolutely. I mean, the more I hear stories even from people with lived experience and from, you know, experts like yourselves. It's just, it's all shapes and sizes, right? You know, you really can't judge a book by its cover when it comes to, I mean, anything, and especially homelessness. It's like you said, Dr. Abe, it's students. You know, I myself knew a couple that you would have never known just by looking at them. So I think that definition is great, because it's quite a range. And as you both have experiences with homelessness, you know, from academic to being on the ground to, you know, helping provide any materials they may need, how does someone become homeless? You know, I'm sure you see the aftermath probably a lot, but what are those stories you're hearing? What are the common things that these people go through? You touch on it, maybe it's like, you know, domestic issues, it's problems, you're a refugee, what have you. But let's go a little deeper.
There's no pattern or blueprint to homelessness. People who experience homelessness are really no different from the rest of the population. In fact, the line between being housed and unhoused is quite fluid, and there's many ways into and out of homelessness. The common thread, though, between the individuals and families who experience homelessness is the fact that they're all extremely vulnerable, lack adequate housing, income, and necessary supports to ensure they remain housed.
And I think, you know, there's two pieces to this, and I want to make sure we get them both, which is there's the personal experience. And as Melody said, you know, common threads in that are things like poverty. And I would add to that crisis. And so, you know, we often see kind of a series of unfortunate events, essentially, you know, compounded crises like poverty mixed with family conflict, you know, job loss mixed with, you know, language limitations, you know, disability in the context of intimate partner violence. You know, it's often kind of multiple things. But the second piece I want us to acknowledge too, in when we think about what causes homelessness, is so often we think about this as a personal journey or a family journey. And it's structural as well when we think about causes. And so while we're drawn to the stories, what the stories don't always focus on or what don't always tell us is, well, why is there poverty? Why is there no affordable housing? Why are we not recognizing credentials of newcomers? Why is, you know, violence against women so prevalent in our society? So I think there are also really structural causes that are policy issues. There are systems issues. And so, you know, I just didn't want us to miss, when we think about personal crisis, that we also miss that in a way that we're a country in crisis as long as we have homelessness within our borders.
You know, just getting to the root of things is surprising, where, again, it seems like it's an aftermath of those root issues that homelessness can be the outcome. So like you said, Dr. Abe, it's getting to those root causes and really looking at it as a whole, because you're right, the country is affected, and our community is the country, right? It's all of us as we make it.
You know, I think what makes this really clear to me is when we actually look around the world, and because, you know, if the cause is just personal or just, you know, within a family or a community, then you would presume that the rate of homelessness would be about the same from Canada to the US to Finland to France, because, you know, sure, we'd like to think we're different or whatever, but I think people are all generally quite the same. And yet the rates of homelessness are fundamentally different. So where we have kind of 10 times the rate of homelessness as Finland, and the US has 10 times the rate of homelessness as us, or 100 times that of Finland, that's where it really speaks to the structural differentials and the structural causes.
Let's shift locally now, and let's talk about how this kind of, you know, all within Peel and Melody, you know, for you, what does this all mean in terms of Peel? Like, you know, you're with Salvation Army for Peel. In your experience, what does homelessness in Peel mean? Like, how might this differ from other communities?
I would say one of the big differences in Peel is the demographic variance. That makes a big difference in how communities are served. For example, a small town in rural Ontario is unlikely to have the same ethnic diversity we see in Peel, which can present us with some unique challenges This could include interpreters, connections with ethnic communities, and understanding cultural and religious practices. Another big difference in Peel from other communities is the geographical vastness of Peel. In Toronto, a lot of the supports are centralized. And in Peel, there's not one specific downtown core for Brampton, Mississauga, and Caledon. We don't have the same focal point like they would in Toronto. So with that being said, this means that our outreach, location of shelters, and transportation is very important for our clients.
It goes to exactly what you said, Abe, too, right? It's clearly, you know, Peel is a much very different situation than downtown Toronto as well. And I think a lot of the issues, at least what I've been seeing, what I've been hearing from everyone is everybody doesn't think there's homelessness in Peel because it's Peel, right? It doesn't look like it's something that would be having that problem. But, you know, as we dive deeper and have these conversations, it absolutely exists there. In terms of, I guess, solving it, you know, this is a huge question and I don't think there's really one right answer, but I feel like, you know, this is up for discussion, which is, in your opinion, what are some of the best practices or innovative practices that have the most promise to solve homelessness?
Housing First was a revolutionary idea when it was introduced because it didn't require homeless people to fix their problems before getting permanent housing. Instead, its premise was that people are better able to address their individual problems when basic needs such as food and a place to live are met. This is a shift from how we used to practice with our homelessness population, and it puts the responsibility on our community and organization to listen to and understand the needs of our clients. As long as they're housed, we have the ability to support them and keep them housed. The shelter, for many of them, it becomes their community. And it's really important that as we work with them, that we connect them to new connections in their community so that they don't feel that loneliness or sense of family loss that they feel in the shelters.
Yeah, so I definitely agree that Housing First is, you know, it's a respectful, it's a client-centered approach where, you know, essentially we're saying folks don't have to get ready to be housed, that everyone is housable and that it just needs the right supports, the right choice, and the right, you know, respect of the person and who they are and where they want to end up. But I would push a little bit because in London, where I'm situated, you know, we've been providing Housing First for probably on a decade now and have many Housing First organizations, and we have hit a bit of a wall. And so I wanted to acknowledge that Housing First is a best practice, but it isn't the only solution. And so a couple of the challenges I would point out in the context of Housing First, one is that you have to have the housing. And so, you know, in London, we had a real positive time, you know, from 2011, 2012, through to about 2016, where Housing First was helping move chronically homeless people into permanent housing. And we were seeing our shelter populations decline. We were seeing length of stays in shelter decrease, amount of rough sleeping decrease. However, we quickly used up the available housing stock and found ourselves in the kind of 1% vacancy territory, which is essentially a rate at which folks who don't have a strong housing history or strong references can't get into the housing market. At the same time, our other congregate affordable housing developments had filled up. And so yes, Housing First works, but first you need the housing. You need somewhere for folks to go. And we're not keeping up as a country, I would say, in that department. And so, you know, it's all well and good, but if there's nowhere to put people, or if all of your workers are at capacity, that's the other issue, was that, you know, takes high intense services, if you can only support 10, 20 people, then you need a lot of workers to change the system. The second piece is Housing First is kind of a downstream approach. Ultimately, it even prioritizes chronic homelessness, which means, you know, entry into service for Housing First often, well, we say there's no kind of requirement. The requirement often is that you've been in shelter for a while. And so this is like, you know, it's a sort of a band-aid solution. And I think a lot of focus also has to be put on prevention. And that's where, again, Housing First doesn't prevent, it responds. And so how do we actually create a system that prevents that episode of homelessness in the first place, so that we're not focusing on just getting people out of chronic homelessness?
Yeah, that was a great point, Dr. Abe. And I feel like that's a great segue into, you know, my next question, which is, you know, when do current practices such as emergency shelters come in? You know, is it when there's lack of staff? Is it when there's, you know, not enough space? Like, can you explain to the audience about emergency shelters? Same thing with you, Melody.
The emergency shelters are a great resource for our homeless population to receive immediate assistance in terms of shelter and food. But we don't just stop there. At the shelters, we work with the clients to develop a light housing plan, assist with getting health cards, identification, connecting them with Ontario Works for financial support, as well as linking them with a housing worker from the region of Peel to take that light housing plan into more intensive housing plan as we work to find appropriate accommodations to get them housed and keep them housed. We're also able to provide emotional supports and addiction supports during their stay in the shelter.
Yeah, and I think it fits in really well in terms of that landing place in a context of a crisis. And the COVID-19 pandemic has actually really highlighted the role it plays, because one of the first things that we were forced to consider within the sector was the idea of depopulation. Obviously, congregate living environments, most of these, and you know, there's a high risk for this population who are medically vulnerable often. And so the shelters, many of them had to immediately kind of decrease their occupancy levels. And we saw, and as well as there were other factors within the housing sector that happened at the same time, such as, you know, people kicking out informal tenants from their homes, you know, from their basements, that sort of thing at the time. And we saw a real massive uptick in street homelessness and at the outset of the pandemic. And it really shows, you know, the role that emergency shelters play in being a place for people to land when they need some help. And I love what Melody points out, though, that it's like, it's not home, right? The shelter's a resource center, right? It's a place to find the assistance that you need to access the support, to be safe, right, for that time. But really, ideally, not to stay for too long, and to move on to what's permanent and safe, and where people want to live.
Yeah, it definitely isn't a home. I feel like a lot of people think very differently of what a shelter actually is, and, you know, what's required actually to be at a shelter. There's, you know, a lot more to it than just, you know, step right in. There's, you know, certain requirements that you need. Now, I think we talked a lot about what it is, you know, a little bit of how we're trying to solve it. And I guess that's the big question here is, can it actually be solved? The more on the, what you were saying there before, Dr. Abe, which is like on the prevention side, is there a place where we can stop it at a bottleneck? Like, how should we all look at this and in ways that we can actually truly solve this thing?
I think solving homelessness is something we're always working towards. But having said that, that doesn't mean there will never be people in crisis or people who need emergency or temporary housing. There will always be people who will have to leave their home due to family conflict, eviction, domestic violence, job loss, and financial insecurity. There'll always be a need for emergency services in one form or another, but we can always try to aim for zero growth. The main goal of solving homelessness is to ensure that there is housing stability. And this requires appropriate, affordable, and safe accommodations with wraparound supports based on each individual case.
Yeah, and I think I agree. I think it's a solvable problem. And again, I looked around the world and see what other folks are doing. And Finland, to me, jumps out as what I would call a positive deviant. And deviant in that they're doing something different than everyone else is doing. And positive in that it's working. And a huge difference we see there is around public housing, also called social or community housing. And where in the 1980s, you know, almost every high-income country in the world either stopped building new public housing, or even if you know you're the UK or the US, actually sold off their public housing. Finland, on the other hand, they didn't stop that, and they continued to develop housing as a country, as a landing place for people who had higher needs and needed more affordability. And in Canada, our public housing plays such a key role for a rent geared to income level. And as is in most regions, is the most frequent exit from shelters into public housing. And that is just vastly unavailable. The wait lists for public housing are extreme. You know, in the Toronto area, over 20 years, where I am in London, around 7 to 8 years. And so I think if we're going to solve this, again, it's not just on the homeless serving sector to solve it. You know, they're doing everything they can. They're adapting the best practices. But unless we do things like return to building new public housing, we're just going to be kind of chasing the same problem and following the same path. And that's where I think we do need to look at who is actually solving this and what are they doing that's different than we're doing.
Absolutely. It feels like it's a collective, you know, a collective thing to solve, you know, not just locally, regionally. It's literally a global issue. And by looking at other countries and bringing it back home is always, you know, something great, right? We're always learning from each other and maybe we can help another country, et cetera. Melody, I mean, with all your experience in Peel, like in your opinion, what does this mean in the context of Peel? Like what's Peel's role in solving?
I'm going to mention two things in terms of Peel. In terms of prevention, the region of Peel has been very proactive and they've embraced a concept that we use in the shelters called diversion workers. And what our diversion workers do is when someone is housed and facing eviction, our diversion workers will work with the client, landlord, and the region to get to the root of the issue, provide financial supports to keep them housed. If there's an issue with tension or conflict between the tenant and the landlord, our diversion worker can step in and provide mediation to try to get to the root of the issue to find a resolution. And if a resolution can't be found, then our diversion worker will work as a housing worker to provide new listings and means of accommodation and connect them with landlords to look for new housing. But the other thing I want to mention in Peel is like when ending homelessness, this means doing things differently and not simply managing the problem through emergency services and supports such as shelters. Because when people come to depend on emergency services without the ability to find affordable housing, this leads to an uncertain future. The region of Peel has endorsed a 10-year housing plan called Home for All. And they've set an aggressive goal to meet the growing needs of the community for affordable housing. And it's projected that by 2028, 75,000 affordable housing units will be built in the region of Peel.
Sounds like, you know, what I hear from, I think, not just from locally, Melody, what you're saying, and from Dr. Abe is, you know, there's hope here, right? There's hope in that we are all working together to make sure that there are things involved, there are things in place that can go from prevention and also at the same time, at the outcome of housing, of homelessness is we're trying to solve it from both ends, essentially. But again, it sounds like from the root of it all, we got to get to the root of it, which is what are the things that we're going to prevent this even happening?
Which I would put in a bit of a caveat, right? And of course, I'm a strong believer in affordable housing and new affordable housing builds are a big part of what we have to do. However, I would warn that what's deemed affordable is set against average market rents. And so affordable housing is usually 70 or 80% of average market rent. It's more affordable, absolutely. However, we've seen over the past couple of years where average market rents are going. And that means that, you know, every month that market rent goes up, so do supposedly affordable units. And at the same time, those on things like income assistance are not seeing increases. And so every day, affordable or supposedly affordable housing gets a little bit further out of reach for those in abject poverty. So while those 75,000 new units will help low-income families particularly, most of those will actually still be out of reach for people exiting homelessness. So yes, it's one piece of the puzzle, but I still think we need to go a little deeper if at a system level, we're going to honestly prevent and end homelessness.
That's a great, great point. It's so true. I think we can't forget that there are many, many moving parts to this issue and that we have to pay attention to all of them. Given everything we've discussed today, what are those key takeaways you'd like our audience to understand about homelessness, more specifically homelessness in Peel?
For me, the key takeaway that I have is remembering that we are a community, so the responsibility of solving and preventing homelessness lies with all of us. You know, financial contributions help, but positive personal interactions with people goes a long way in treating homeless with dignity. And something as simple as a hello or eye contact can really make a difference in a homeless person's day. I really truly believe that if people feel they have value, they will also have the motivation to help themselves.
I would love that point. And I would just add that, again, system lens, which is that, you know, I hope people take away that there are big structural issues here. The housing system as a whole, income support systems, policy, who we vote for, who makes decisions about our homelessness plans at the federal, at the provincial, and at the municipal level. These all matter, and you know how genuine these plans are about kind of just tweaking around the edges or fundamentally making a shift that changes the story. So I hope people take away that absolutely what Melody says, you know, these are our neighbors, these are our friends, these are family for some of us, and they require dignity and respect. And at the same time, you know, we need a system that actually changes the big picture, or else, again, we're just going to keep getting more of what we've got.
Exactly. Let's prevent it. At the same time, be respectful and all work together. That's what we're trying to do, is do something. Massive problem requires a massive amount of support from everybody. Well, that wraps up this episode of Peel Talks Housing. And I just want to thank my amazing guests, Melody Watson, Dr. A. Boutsouren, for being here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was great to chat with you.
You can find information about our podcast on our website, peelregion.ca, and you can join the conversation on the Region of Peel social media accounts. My name is Axel Villamil, and this is Peel Talks Housing. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of the Region of Peel or the direction provided by the Region of Peel's Council.